Welcome to Women in the Middle Entrepreneurs, the podcast that gives you an unfiltered behind-the-scenes look at what it's really like being a woman in the middle who's over 50 and following her entrepreneurial dreams. Grab a superhero cape, girlfriend, because you deserve one. I'm your host, Master Certified Life Coach and Midlife Mentor, Susie Rosenstein, and I am excited to inspire you with interviews that feature all of this midlife amazingness. Let's go. Hey there, welcome back to the show. We have another really exciting interview ahead of us about how to have a completely new experience of money and life, unlike anything you've known before. Today, you'll be meeting Morgana Ray, a woman in the middle entrepreneur who cultivates and supports world-changing women leaders to heal the rift between heart, spirit, and money to save the world only as they can. Welcome to the show, Morgana. Thanks so much for joining us today.
I'm so happy to be here, Susie.
I was so delighted to have you in because I couldn't wait to talk to you. I know we're going to be having a great conversation about your midlife entrepreneur story. We're going to be talking about your business, what's going really well, and also what midlife issues might be getting in your way or actually being annoying to some extent or another, and for sure are challenging in your life as well as being a business owner. So we're going to get things started by everyone's favorite question. How old are you? How long you've been an entrepreneur? What is it that you do in the world? Your journey, all of the good stuff. So take it away.
I am almost 57. I turned 57 January of 2024. I have been a late bloomer. In some ways, no. There were some things that I was never actually a child. There was never a time that I actually believed Santa Claus was real or the Easter Bunny was real. But in terms of like basic life skills, in terms of self-confidence, making money, choosing good boyfriends, all of that, very, very late bloomer. Seriously, I didn't even meet my first time ever husband until I was 45. And the whole thing that I do now, which is I've been a coach for 30 years, and my focus is on relationship with money, specifically women's relationship with money, not because I'm a financial planner or that I was a whiz with money, but I was such a spectacular failure with money, despite great grades at an Ivy League college, half a dozen coaching certifications, a roster of movie star clients who loved me, a mountain of testimonials, all these certifications. Maybe I mentioned that before. The marketing, the tagline, the website, the public speaking, blah, 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 did not matter. In 2003, I was living in Los Angeles and struggling to make $100 a month. Beat that. Don't.
Oh, no.
Ugh. And so I would take more classes. I would take more business classes. I would get another coaching certification. I would work with a coach, which is insane because I wasn't even making enough money for rent or food or cable or anything. So not only was I not making money, but I was spending more money and nothing was moving the dial. I was getting great results. People wanted to hire me. And then there was this kind of the record scratch moment where they would ask me how I worked, which years later I figured out was a euphemism for what do you charge? But they would ask, and when somebody asked me what I would charge, it was like I would choke because helping people is easy. That is my talent. That is my gift. That is my joy. That is me being the most me I can be. Charging brought up all sorts of ugly insecurity, guilt, shame, fear, going back generations. Right. Family escaping pogroms and all sorts of, you know, fights, family members not speaking to each other, stealing, all sorts of just this completely unconscious system of reactions to an underlying experience that money gets in the way of love. And I always choose love. So it didn't matter what I did, nothing was changing. And every program will make you a promise and I would do what I was supposed to do and it wouldn't work. And it really came down to I finally, this was my Hail Mary last ditch effort, was I took a class on overcoming sales objections, especially for someone like me who just dreaded the money conversation like it was some big, smelly, awful monster that I didn't want anyone to know about. And I took this class on overcoming sales objections, and I'm that great student. Like 1983, I was hit by a car. I was in a coma. I had a traumatic brain injury, and I graduated from high school as a National Merit Scholar anyway. So I'm a good student.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Right? So I took the class on overcoming sales objections. I learned the magic words for what to say when somebody says, I want to, but I can't afford it, or I don't have time, or whatever. And I mastered those magic words. And seven people in a row, I overcame their objections, and they said yes. And seven people in a row didn't show up for our first coaching call and never paid me. And that was when I lost the last gasp of hope that I could ever make a living, ever be a grown-up, ever be self-sufficient, ever be wanted on this planet. There's so many layers of hurt and fear and rejection that get bundled up in money.
Totally.
And I gave up on life. I remember being in my teeny tiny apartment, dragging closed the blackout curtains, crypting out my little bedroom that I couldn't afford, getting on my bed, lying down and just wailing, crying, screaming, raging, feeling like the universe hated me and hating the universe back and just not wanting to be here. And you know what that means. And I just cried and cried and raged until I was cried out. And when I was cried out, I had two thoughts. The first one was, well, maybe money needed to be my next area of spiritual growth, which is a cheat for someone like me. It's like, if I hide the money in the spiritual box, maybe I can deal with it, right?
Yeah.
Which is a good strategy. If you're like that. If you're the healer type. But the next thought I had was really interesting. I became curious about what was going on inside of me that couldn't be with money. And that was the first time I ever thought that way, because it did not make sense. My coach that I hired, he and I graduated from coaching school and took our exams and got certified on the same day, but he had a house. And I was making $100 a month, and I would do everything he told me to do, and nothing was working.
Wow. It's kind of like you were repelling money.
Superpowers.
Yeah.
I had a big R on my chest. That was my X-Man superpower, is money repulsion, no matter what I did. And I'm speaking, I'm really speaking specifically to anyone who is listening, who has had that experience of doing everything right, doing everything you're supposed to do, and not getting the results. And it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it really, I hear what you're saying. It doesn't make sense. The thing is, like with marketing, we don't know exactly what's going to work. But when you've been at it a while, and it's not like you're brand new and you've only been working on it for a year, and, you know, and you're not just doing marketing well, but you're also becoming an excellent coach. So when those two things, after a certain period of time, it can be very confusing.
I did this with money, and I've done it in other areas of my life, like love. So when I say this, I'm going to talk more about money for now, because that's where I'm weird and what I'm known for, and clients making millions of dollars. Like my client Leslie made $1.2 million within hours of my coaching her. And I get these people tell me this all the time. I had a conversation with a woman yesterday who just used my book and how that brought in her life partner and how it's just exploded her income. And my core belief from coaching thousands of people over the last 20 years is that when you're doing everything you're supposed to be doing and you're still not seeing the result, you are protecting yourself from something. Something that you want is dangerous, And you're probably completely not consciously aware of it, because if you were, you're smart, you would have fixed it. So I'm talking to the very valid reason that you protect yourself from what you want. You're not a loser. You're not a failure. You're actually very successful at protecting yourself from a very real danger. And we have to make it safe for you to get what you want. Change happens at the speed of safety. If change isn't happening, something isn't safe yet. Not your fault. But when you're aware of that, then you can find out where the danger is and make it safe. And that's when the money and the love and the health breakthroughs and these weird sort of seeming miracles happen, often far faster and bigger than I can account for.
Well, what happened for you that was the breakthrough?
Okay. So back to my tale of woe, where I'm just like, take me, world. I don't want to be alive. Everything is terrible. I'm hopeless. I'm just despair. And I laugh about it now, but oh my God, it was so real and so painful.
I'm only laughing because you're laughing, because it's certainly not funny, but I know upon reflection, it's fascinating.
I know the dark night of the soul. I really, really do. And I know how dangerous it is. So I had this despair and I had that curiosity about what's going on inside of me, because this does not make sense. And soon after that, I had a call with my coach. The coach that, how could I have a coach when I'm making $100 a month and can't pay for anything? Living on credit card debt, borrowing, you know. But I had a call with my coach, and that call saved my life, changed my life, and set me on this course. I came to that call with all the despair. I've done everything, nothing worked, all of that. And by the way, if you're working with a coach, I know we all want to be on our good behavior, but honestly, your coach loves you when you just bring the mess. It gives us something to do. And so I came there as this big lump of despair. And he asked me a question. Instead of telling me what to do or trying to solve the problem, he asked me a really weird question that changed my life. He asked me, if your money was a person, who would your money be? And suddenly, all that pain and rejection and anger and despair and helplessness materialized in the form in my mind's eye. My money person in that moment was this big, tall, scary, dirty, violent, terrifying biker who was all bad and wanted to do me harm. Not a real person, but like in that moment, he was tall and bald and had the long sideburns and the white beater shirt and the tattoos. And there was just nothing wrong with bikers. Seriously, this one was bad. And I could feel it with every cell of my body. And it felt so real. And it was my big light bulb aha moment, because it was so clear to me how I had to create maximum distance. I had this moment of imagining myself at a live event and having my eye on that guy constantly to create distance. And that was the first time in my life that my financial situation made perfect sense. It didn't matter what I did consciously. It didn't matter all the public speaking, all the enrollment conversations, all the brochures, because it was so far back in history that we actually had these trifold paper things called brochures. It didn't matter, because every cell of my being knew I had to create distance and protect myself from this guy. Mm. And there was no way that I could have money in my life if it was this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really important, because I would never know that I felt that way if I'm just looking at money as an abstract concept. But when it becomes a person, it becomes real. Real to our unconscious mind. And our unconscious mind is where all of our attitudes, beliefs, and actions come from. So you can be steering like the captain of a ship with your conscious mind, which is maybe 3% of your capacity, but your unconscious mind is actually deciding where the ship goes. So everything I'm telling you is actually speaking to both the conscious and unconscious mind so that you can have a shift. So this dude had to go. There was no way I could have money in my life if it was that biker dude. We had to get rid of him. And I'll talk more about that later. And that created a new problem, which is, you know, very often what happens with solutions. It's like you get what you want, yay, and oh, heck, you just got what you wanted, and there's a new problem. I just got rid of my money monster, and now I have no relationship with money. And I live in Los Angeles.
Right.
And the only relationship that I had known with money had been so heartbreaking and soul-crushing and frightening and disheartening and all that. It was like after a really bad breakup, you do not want that again. And at that moment, honestly, if I could have no relationship with money, that would have been awesome. But that's not life. And we're here to work with life. So I asked myself, who could I want so much that I'd be willing to have a relationship with this imaginary person, even if it's money? So I had, this person had to be so wonderful that I'd be willing to be in this relationship, even if it also happens to be money. So I asked myself that question. And then in this moment of easy peasy visualization, which is not normal for me, just sidebar very quickly, I'm not generally good at visualization. If you ask me to meditate and imagine that I'm sitting by a river, I will spend the next 45 minutes going through a slideshow of every river I've seen in my life. So this is where the conscious controlling brain can get in the way. And what makes it work is having enough emotion that it overrides the hyper-controlling conscious brain so that your emotional self can take over. So anyway, I was so lucky that I was so miserable that the monster was really real and the monster was really gone. And then when I wanted to fill that spot, I asked myself, who do I want? And in my mind's eye appeared this tall, dark, handsome, romantic, clean-cut, sweet, young, hunky guy dressed in a tuxedo, holding a bouquet of red flowers, as if he wanted to woo me, which was really weird in the greatest way possible. Wow, money wants to woo me? Like, I had never had that thought before, and it was delicious, and he was sweet. And I could feel how much he wanted to be with me. And I had that awareness that, wait a second, I have no idea how to let money be with me. I have such strong muscles pushing it away. And I was starting to have this awareness of all the ways I pushed it away unconsciously. Not depositing checks, not collecting money owed, being ashamed to discuss getting paid, all of that nonsense. It just like I was suddenly noticing for the first time. So I didn't know how to let money be with me the way he wanted to be. So I asked, what do you need from me to let you be with me the way you want to be with me? That's a very different question than what do you need from me to love me? Rule one of your money, honey, and I'll go through the steps. I'm kind of telling the story and hiding the steps in the story. But when you meet your money, honey, the number one rule is your money, honey, loves you unconditionally, loves you more than anybody in the world. This is your relationship with money. Love is unconditional. Presence is not. We have the body, so we have the power. But I didn't know how to allow money to be with me. So I asked. And when you ask a question, you get an answer. So my money, honey, at that moment in March of 2003 said, I need you to love me and stop treating me like a monster. And he said that was such vulnerability. And I didn't want to hurt him. And that seemed fair. So I took a look at how I was treating money like a monster. And I just mentioned some of the ways, being ashamed to, you know, state my price, to collect the fee, to deposit the check, all sorts of weird stuff that probably the rest of the world doesn't have. But that's where I was starting at. And I made a commitment to him that next time he brought me a gift, which at that time usually looked like a client, I would say thank you. Again, love him, stop treating him like a monster. So I had an opportunity to try this commitment out. Because the next day I was contacted by four people. And over that week, four people hired me at double what I'd ever charged before. And they kept coming and they kept coming. And I started group programs. I started waiting lists. I wrote my book. I started doing retreats, and I've made millions of dollars. And I'm the person who was struggling to make $100 a month. And it all starts with the relationship. And I just have to go back to change happens at the speed of safety. If something is stuck, look for what is not safe and make it safe first. Because you just to have what you want safely.
Sometimes it's a wake-up call. And I think that's what happened with you. Like, there are a lot of things that nudge us to be more open and curious than we normally are. And for some reason, the depth of despair, like I have a visual in my mind of what was going on for you in that tiny apartment right now. And it's not pretty. And it's so sad and so frustrating and such a gift that you ended up that was the thing that you needed to look at things differently.
I think that as a human being, feeling helpless, feeling unwanted are the two deepest wounds that we have. And getting all these clients who at that time in my career were all entertainment industry clients, but they were human beings. So they had money issues because money is, in my experience, the number one reason people give for what we can't have, do, or be. And I've coached clients living on couches, on public assistance, and I've coached billionaires. And I find the same root causes to whatever their money drama is, whether it's they don't have enough, they're afraid of losing it, or it is getting in the way of love or any permutation of drama. And I found that the root cause is never really the money. Money is the symptom. And I know that there are coaches who love to say, change your money story, change your life, which, by the way, is great marketing. It has never been true, though, in my experience coaching. It may be for somebody else, but never in my experience coaching. The money is the symptom. It's what money represents that makes us so weird about it, so insecure, makes it so dramatic. And it really, at the deepest level, it represents our right to exist. Can we have shelter and food and transportation and healthcare and fun and play and all these things? And it represents, am I loved? Am I worthy or valued? Do I have power? Am I safe? And those are really the core human issues of life. And they show up, I think, faster and louder in the arena of money than anything else.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. So the book is called Financial Alchemy, 12 Months of Magic and Manifestation. There it is. And yeah, that's awesome. So of course, there'll be a link for that. And we'll mention that link again soon. I want to talk a little bit about where this intersection of being the amazing age that you are, that we are, and running a business. So that's really what I get very excited about that topic, because I see women our age who are entrepreneurs as superheroes running around with a cape, because there's so much stuff that comes up and can get in the way, just like money can get in the way, midlife can get in the way of you wanting to run the business the way you want to. So tell me a little bit about what that experience has been like for you.
Okay, the plus side that I've been waiting for my whole life is that I have more confidence and self-worth than I ever had before. This is what I dreamed of, having that level of confidence in my ability to help people, having all the proof, the daily affirmations from people I've never met that this is working for them, the daily experiences of clients having breakthroughs, that, you know, that's my happy place. So there is, I think, a greater level of discernment of who belongs in my life, who belongs in my business, all of that than I was capable of, or that I think most of us, especially women, are capable of when we're younger. And that's a huge plus. And congratulations to me. I began menopause halfway through my 56th year of life.
Oh my God.
Or I was 56 and a half. So I guess that's my 57th year of life. Yeah, wow. I'm a late bloomer.
Wow.
So I got the experience of getting old everywhere, everything all at once, really fast, overnight. the knee pain, the back pain, the brain fog, the energy dips. So I have been on this journey of hormones and supplements and just, you know, finding my way through that. I am now an orphan. My father died in 2019. My mother died this month.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. It's a journey. Yeah, easier now that I have tools, that I have a great life partner that, again, I just wasn't capable of when I was younger. So maybe the superpower, especially for women of middle age, is we become far better at prioritizing.
Yes. Yeah. So what has that meant for you in your business?
I have, especially in the last few years, been cutting a lot of busy work away, really focusing on what I love the most, really caring less about impressing people who don't really matter to me. Midlife has coincided with this pandemic thingy. Yeah. And that has shifted my values too, to being far more, I think, inner motivated. Really, really grateful for huge basic things like health and love and home and food and sunshine and the relationships I have, and really not needing to get my sense of self based on impressing strangers. I care far more about, here's a big way my business has shifted, is that I work with fewer and fewer people, and I work with them deeper and deeper because the relationship matters to me. And I get that that's the experience that I want to have.
Yeah.
It gives me more power over the experience I want my clients to have.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I had a similar little experience like that too, when I shifted a business model from a membership to a longer term coaching program because of that, because I wasn't personally excited about having more relationships that were, I don't want to say superficial, but not as deep as the kind that you get when you're coaching women in this kind of coaching for 6 months or more. Yeah. And in some cases for, you know, for it's a community still, but it's much longer. That was much more fulfilling for me. I didn't want to have more and more people in the membership, and I knew them less and less.
I don't want anybody to fall through the cracks.
Exactly.
Like, I like 100% client happiness. And that really limits the number that I can focus on. And let me tell you about my make out with a cute guy business plan.
Oh, I would love to hear that.
Okay. This was in 2012 when I was 45 years old. And the whole financial alchemy, my relationship with money process, and there are six steps. So please remind me to go over those before we sign off.
But okay.
So I'm, you know, speaking around the world and making more money than I ever imagined. It was crazy. And I'm speaking in all these beautiful places, and it breaks my heart every time, because I've been looking for my life partner, soulmate, since I chased Brian Patterson under the piano on his fifth birthday, and he was the older man. So I've been looking for a while, and I was still single, and I found myself speaking on one of these stages about, you know, change happens at the speed of safety. And if you're doing everything right and you're not getting those results. And I hear that really annoying voice at the back of my head saying, that sounds like your love life. Because I was taking all the classes and doing all the stuff that I was supposed to be doing and not getting, finding love. So I dug up a love monster. I just made a case for all the reasons in the world that love might be dangerous. That's the step one, is uncover the root cause. And so these six steps apply to money or love. Uncover the root cause, everything that made love unsafe, everything that makes money unsafe. And it's always love, worth, safety, and power. So when I looked at all the ways love had hurt me over my lifetime, it made perfect sense that I was single, because it was almost like love wanted to kill me by lifting my hopes and then crashing them. And my love monster step number two is personifying the pain as this external entity that's all bad. My love monster was bigger than any money monster I'd ever had.
Yeah.
And I had to make a decision, who was going to survive, me or the monster? That's step number three. So I annihilated the monster by any means necessary with my imagination, which created an empty space for love to exist. That's half of the process. The next step, and I do this more with money, is when the monster is away, all that exists is love. And the personification of that love is your new honey, your money honey, or your love honey, or both. Then you have a conversation with your, I'm going to call it your money honey. That's step number five. What do you need from me to stay with me? Which is not, what do you need from me to love me? It's, what do you need from me? Because I have the power and you want to stay with me, that allows you to have a conversation with your new relationship. And step number six is take concrete, measurable action, because action is magical. And if you want physical, real world results, you take an action. It doesn't even have to look like it has anything to do with money or love. It's usually going to be something that is good for you, makes you feel good about yourself. It can be taking a dance class, going to Paris, paying your bills, whatever it's going to be. So I destroyed my love monster and met my human honey 2 months later. And the piece that I left out, because I'm a non-linear speaker sometimes, and I apologize for that, is that, so it was 2012. I'm making all this money. I'm going on all these trips to speak in Oslo and Sydney and everywhere in between. And it's really exciting and super lonely. Is I realized that if I wanted love in my life, I could not be spending hours standing in line, shipping things at the post office every day. I had to digitalize all my products. And I had to simplify things and I had to raise my rates. And I called that my make out with a cute guy business plan, because I needed to make time in my life to travel the world with the love of my life, because that's what I wanted. So yeah. Cleared the calendar, cleared out the money monster, met a guy on OkCupid whose handle was Travel Guy. And he came up with the idea that we get married 100 times in 100 countries. Wow. And 26 down, 74 to go.
100 times in 100 countries. I can't even tell you how happy that makes me.
That and is anybody so romantic. Watching, yeah. And do it. Steal this idea. Steal it. It's fun and it's romantic, and there's something magical about saying, okay, we are going to stop the world, book a trip, and recommit to each other just to do it.
Mm. And that was his idea.
His idea. I married the one human being on earth who is more romantic than I am.
That is just the cutest. Oh. What, when you think about everything that you've done on those trips and all of those recommitments, what's the one that stands out the most?
So we got married in Slovenia, a country I had not even heard of until we were in Croatia. And we received, I think we were actually in Montenegro, when we received an invitation to get married at Lake Bled in Slovenia, which looks like a fairy tale. It's this lake with this island and a church in the middle, and then what looks like Sleeping Beauty's castle on a cliff behind. And so that was, to me, that was the Disney princess wedding I didn't know that I needed.
Oh.
And it was so pretty and so magical. And they have a legal ceremony. We were legally wed in this 3,000-year-old castle. Or, no, not three, 1,000, old castle.
Very old, yeah.
Right, very old. And it's in Slovenian. And then they have a translator. And their vows just went deep to my heart. And then my husband and I made up our own vows each time on the spot. And his vows just, they just landed more perfectly than ever before. And you have the lake and it's glistening. And then he carries me up these 100 steps of fortitude, and we ring the bell of wishes on the little island church. And we eat the special cake that you only eat in Slovenia on New Year's and weddings. And that That, and there are all these tourist snappy photos. That was, for me, the wowest wedding. And we've had a lot of really wow weddings. For my husband, we got married in the Republic of San Marino. And it was this dress up of medieval clothing, medieval Latin. And I'm in a tower and my husband is down below negotiating my bride price with my dad there, my pretend dad. And then when that's negotiated, they carry up my address and jewelry and they dress me and they sing songs and they get us married. And then they knighted my husband. And that was his favorite. I am married to a knight.
Well, of course you are.
San Marino. Crazy.
Those are great stories. I'm so glad I asked. Morgana, how can people best get in touch with you?
Best way is at morganaray.com. Just my name, put a .com on it. That is the mothership. And I have my free Does Money Love You quiz there, which you can also find at doesmoneyloveyou.com. But everything's at morganaray.com.
Perfect.
You have my 4-part Money Magnetic video series there, which is free. You've got my blog with hundreds of articles and videos. And you'll find my book, Financial Alchemy, 12 Months of Magic and Manifestation. If you want a curated guide through how to actually do this process that we sort of whizzed through the cliff notes of, but it will really hold your hand and it has additional audio and video supplements embedded in the book, do that. One of my favorite clients ever had her first quarter of $1 million sales month using my book before we ever spoke, before she hired me, before I knew she existed. So I put everything that I could for you to self-coach yourself with the book. And then, of course, if you want to go to Bali with me or you want to be coached by me, you'll find me at morganaray.com.
That's awesome. Thank you. Morgana, you're awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time from your day and sharing all of this. I really appreciate how you've explained the importance of this hidden intersection between money and love. Like, you did it beautifully. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. That's it for now. If you're listening and loving what you hear, please like and subscribe. Reviews are great too and much appreciated. And if you're a woman in the middle who's 50 or over and an entrepreneur and would also like to come on the show, please go to www.midlifeinterviews.com and fill out an application. We'd love to have you on to share your story. Thanks so much for listening. It's never too late for you to put yourself on your agenda. I'm Susie Rosenstein, and I'll talk to you again soon. Now, real quick before we say goodbye, if you are connecting with the show, I'd love to invite you to a happiness breakthrough coaching session. It's my laser-focused coaching call that will help you get clear about what's getting in your way as a woman in the middle entrepreneur and confident about your next steps to more happiness in your next chapter. Head over to www.nextchapterbreakthrough.com. Talk to you soon.